interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by. Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Monday to you. And it is a Monday, March 25, Sweet 16 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And we got you. It's a three-hour tour setting sail from inside the 237 Roof Studios. No job too big or too small. Just call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663. Half the lead with LSU's win over Maryland. Maybe more importantly, an early look ahead to LSU-Michigan State. Deja vu all over again to give you Yogi Berra. Number three, LSU versus number two, Michigan State in the Sweet 16. This has happened before. Might have to have Jordy Holtberg on this show sometime this week to talk about that game. After all, he put up 25 points in that contest. But that's another story for another day. As we lead off, you're welcome to join us. Let's talk March Madness and LSU's place in the dance. 706-0111. As I look back upon 69-67, LSU over Maryland, here's what stands out. Bench play from the Tigers. I know about the heroics from Waters, 1.6 seconds to go. Skylar Mays, big time triple and very reminiscent. I'm right there with John Brady on the call as I was listening. Felt a lot like Daryl Mitchell's three-pointer from Jacksonville. But Skylar, Trey, Reed, yeah, they carried a lot of the load, and they typically do. Combined, it's a group that gave you 41 points, not bad for them. Their most efficient day from the field, not even close. But LSU's bench in particular in the first half was the biggest difference maker. Darius Days, Javonte Smart, Emmett Williams combined to give you 26 points. You're going to take that and sprint to the finish line with it. Now, as we know, that's not exactly something that LSU does with regularity. They kind of sputter toward the finish line. And they did that again. And it made just about everyone watching, listening, streaming probably want to pull their hair out. But the Tigers, despite the solid bench play in the first half, despite having 34 points to 24 for Maryland in the paint, Tony Benford's group just about coughed up a 15-point lead after intermission. And it's always interesting to watch how a technical foul assessed can either deflate or ignite a team. No question about it. Mark Turgeon for the Terps got his group going when he got a little fired up early to midway through the second half. But LSU did what LSU does. If you're surprised, shame on you. You've had too much of a body of work. But there is one thing I believe we can start to acknowledge. This team is still being adequately coached without Will Wade at the helm. If you confuse that as me saying this team doesn't need Will Wade or he's not a good bench coach, you're hearing me wrong. But I do want to give some credit to Tony Benford. And he did say after the game, hey, we called up the same play for Trey. We would have if Coach Wade was here. And why not? Involve your best player in a pick-and-roll situation where you really never have any intention of hitting the roller. It's a straight pick to give some daylight to the best scoring point guard LSU's had since Chris Jackson. And he did what he's done a lot this year. What he did against Florida in Gainesville, for example, just without the benefit of a 94-foot running head start. But Trey, spectacular. Almost kind of reminded me of Tyus Edney, if you will, UCLA in 96, and that spurred a title run. So we get a chance to look forward now. And this LSU team, they've taken on the mantle of cardiac cats. It's what they do. They do it against Michigan State. I think they'll be in trouble, and I'll share with you my thoughts there in a second. But they're one of 16 teams left, four from the SEC. And if you watch Duke UCF, Your tourney life is precious, brother, and it can go at any time. And we're talking about how hard a ball is tipped. God, it felt like the kid from UCF could have just tip-dunked that thing home, and we all would have had a much better Sunday evening, and we probably all would have woken up with a little more pep in our step if number one Duke had gone down. And I don't just mean LSU fans. The country roots against Duke. It's established. We get this. But Duke survived, and LSU survived. Michigan State barely got past Bradley in the first round. And so later in the show, I do want to re-rank the 16 teams that are left. Power rankings. Who still has a chance to win it all and cut down the nets in Minneapolis? But what I'll tell you is that LSU, even without Wade, still does a lot of the right things when it matters. And that is incredibly encouraging. Now let's look ahead a little bit. We got all week to do this, but you haven't heard my take yet. Again, we got time for yours whenever you're ready. We'll have a guest in the next segment. You want to fire away on LSU basketball, hit us now. 706-0111. Tigers, Sparty, Friday, 6:09 p.m. tip-off. And early on, Michigan State, a six-point favorite. I guessed it would be about 7 or 8 before I saw the line. So not too much of a surprise there. The biggest difference I'll share with you, even more than Izzo v. Benford, from the last round to this one, Maryland, the fourth youngest team in college basketball this year. Not quite with Sparty. Not Cassius Winston in that group. They're experienced. I've seen this quote a few times in the last few days about their team, and I believe it. They are built for March. Now, LSU, for the first time in 13 years, they are as well. They don't quite have the experience on the sideline with Benford, on the floor with many of their players, minus Cavell Bigby-Williams. But when they look across at the other side on Friday, they're not catching a team full of diaper dandies, baby. Little Dickie V reference for you. His name's been out there today. But you're not catching an inexperienced team in Michigan State. You can't make some of the same mistakes. But I'll tell you this, I feel a little bit now like I did before the LSU-Kentucky game in Rupp. If you listen to my show that day, Clint will be able to verify this. Hell, we probably can go back and get it on wax for you. I told you that day, LSU is playing with house money tonight. Probably not supposed to win. Of course, the big difference is that they were playing in Rupp that night. This one will be in D.C. Neutral ground, sure. Would imagine there's a little bit more of Sparty, but it'll probably be pretty close. Still, probably not a game LSU is supposed to win, but they damn sure can. Will lightning strike again? Can LSU get the type of performance this Friday against Michigan State, a team-wide performance where they battle a really good traditional power and take them down late? It feels the exact same to me. Once you get to the Sweet 16 and many people thought you weren't gonna, you couldn't do it, your coach ain't there, you start a bunch of sophomores and freshmen, it's house money from here on out. Probably not supposed to win. But like I told you, you got a chance to really make a statement and prove something. This would be an even bigger statement given the stakes on the line. Now, lightning will not strike again as it did in the land of bluegrass that Tuesday night a month and a half back. It ain't going to happen again if LSU continues these second half swoons. Michigan State reminded everyone in the Minnesota win that they can snow you under quick, fast, and in a hurry. And so this pattern that LSU has developed, start out strong, kind of keep things on a level coming out of the half, but then at about that 16-minute and under break in the second half, they fall to, well, a word I can't say on radio, and they stay in that type of range until their feet are held to the fire, until they really have to do something about it, or else it's completely going to get away from them. LSU does that against Michigan State. They will lose that basketball game. I will tell you that right now. You can't go into a coma. You can't hit the snooze button for 8 to 12 minutes against Michigan State in this game. The other item of note that we need to discuss early on this week, Michigan State is not going to throw you a zone. It's going to be incumbent that Waters, Reed, and do not forget Javonte Smart win one-on-one battles in this game Friday. And I say smart because I'm not sure anybody on LSU's team, Trey included, can get into the lane, knife between defenders, use his body. He's so skilled, balanced, and gifted doing that. I think this has an opportunity to be a very large Javonte Smart game. And I'll end the first segment by acknowledging the coaching mismatch that is Tom Izzo versus Tony Benford. But Benford is showing on the fly that he could do an admirable job. I just covered that, and I'll reiterate it. The way they finished that one, getting the shots when they needed to in the hands of the right players, didn't really deal with a lot in the foul out sense in this game against Maryland. That was encouraging. It's a step up, though. And so chess is in session. Checkers is done at this point. You got Tom Izzo this round. You might have Coach K the next. Big time proving ground for Tony Benford and these Tigers. And a big show for us today. On the other side of this break, Ricky Blanton, a guy who played in the 1986 Final Four. We'll ask him what's so difficult about this week. The transition going from the round of 32 to the round of 16. So Ricky Blanton, our only scheduled guest in this hour. He'll be with us next. Ruff and Rodri coming aboard at 5:15. And we go up to the land of Sparty. That's right. We're going to East Lansing. Straight up 6 o'clock. Hondo Carpenter. Love the name. Hondo works with SpartanNation.com. He'll be putting in work with us to begin hour number 3. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We're coming right back in on 103.7 The Game.
Winners eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Right back in, continuing to dance into the Sweet 16. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Our next guest, he's played in a Final Four. Spent about 8 years, I believe, as a color analyst for the LSU Sports Radio Network, giving us all the updates on these Tigers. Aboard the ARTCO Equipment Hotline, it's Ricky Bland. Ricky, welcome back in. How are you today?
Great, Ben. How you doing?
I'm doing well, and you and I know that there's a lot of excitement at this time of year. LSU's doing something that the program hasn't in 13 seasons, but what are some of the pitfalls that a team at this stage might encounter?
Well, you got to be guarded, right? That when you're going into the first weekend, there's a ton of optimism for all teams in the country. Rightfully so. March Madness, it's a great event. But after that first weekend, when you're down to 16, you got to be careful. Some teams might think getting to the Sweet 16, they get back on campus, get back in town. A lot of excitement there. They may or may not overlook what's ahead of them, and they got to be careful. The players, the coaches, the university, the community, a lot of accolades going on right now. Great win, great job, saw you. Well, you got to dial it up 5 or 6 days later, and you got to be ready to go. So, you know, the teams that have been there or been to the Sweet 16 last year, maybe the year before, have some guys that have experienced it. They may know how to handle a little bit better. Maybe not. You never know. But there's always that chance the distractions could affect the team.
Ricky Blanton, our guest on 103.7 The Game. And before we look forward to Michigan State, when you reflect on the wins so far in the big dance, what are your observations about Tony Benford, especially late in the game? He even said, look, we called the same play for Trey that Coach Wade would have. How do you think he's done so far, man in the ship?
Yeah, I think he's done well, right? And I think he has a big advantage. You know, he's had 20 before he jumped in. I don't know the exact number, but maybe 30 games. Under his belt, sitting on the sideline with Coach Wade this year and all of last season. And I think it helps you got good guard play, right? When you got good guard play and you're coming into a situation where you're taking over, that helps. Because when you look at the percentages and you watch a basketball game, the guards have the ball in their hands a whole lot more than the other players, especially the point guard, somebody like Trey Water. So with Draymond handling it, they kind of know what to do. He understands time and score for the most part. So, I think it's been a nice transition. The first game against Florida in the SEC tournament was one I think they probably want to have back, but the last two have been good. It was an exciting weekend. I thought LSU, you know, to win an exciting game against Maryland the way they did, that's good stuff.
the opponent Friday, Ricky, Michigan State, kind of a nail biter, I think we would say, in the opening round over Bradley, but definitive in beating Richard Pitino and Minnesota over the weekend. I guess your thoughts on this Michigan State team. We know they were Big Ten champs, awfully good in the conference tournament. Where do they stand for you now?
Well, you know, I think it's a contrast of two styles, right? When you look at their numbers, they want to keep the game in the 60s. They want to play it in the half court. They don't force a lot of turnovers. They don't get out and run only when it's presented. You know, this is Tom Izzo. Anybody who's followed college basketball, Michigan State teams are built for tournament play every year. Big Ten teams, for the most part, Purdue, Michigan, they're still in it. Michigan State, they just play a brand of basketball that the analogy is kind of the football analogy, right? They're going to run the ball and stop the run. I mean, Michigan State wants to play in the half court, execute, score, come down, and guard you man-to-man and keep you from scoring and then rebound the ball when you miss and go. So very interesting, but this team is good. I mean, speaking of point guards, you know, Cassius Winston was the Big Ten Player of the Year. They've played well. They arguably lost one of their two or three best players during the year when they lost Josh Langford. I mean, he's a talented kid. He went down with a bad ankle injury. So, but all in all, it's just the philosophy of the way they play. So it'll be interesting to see how LSU responds to playing that type of team.
Ricky, does your gut tell you that Friday night it's going to be difficult for LSU to have the same level of dominance and advantage in the offensive glass that they typically enjoy?
Yes. I think, you know, if anyone's followed what happened last weekend, you know, Coach Izzo took a little criticism or was questioned about him getting on one of his players because of the energy and the effort, and he didn't apologize for kind of – it was Aaron Henry, who's a freshman player, very talented. So if you don't play for Coach Izzo and you don't give maximum effort, whether it's boxing out or going for an offensive rebound or guarding somebody, he's just one of those old-school coaches going to let you hear about it. So I think and anybody that tells you that plays basketball, rebounding is all about energy and effort and desire and all that good stuff. So when you play against a team like Michigan State, they're going to have a little bit more than most teams because their coach puts an emphasis on rebounding, and he doesn't want the other team to get offensive rebounds, that's for sure.
A few more moments with Ricky Blanton. Good enough to join us today on 103.7 The Game. We're looking ahead to LSU, Michigan State. Remind our listeners, what was the Sweet 16 Elite Eight path? So the regional semi and final for your 86 team. And I guess take us back to that space and time and where your head was at then.
Well, you know, and I lived when you talk about what happens, right? So we're lucky enough to play in Baton Rouge on the year we went. Played Purdue the first round. We beat Memphis State the second round. The PMAC went crazy. The whole town went crazy, right? It was just bizarre. And then we had to go 3 or 4 days, and then we hopped on a plane and went to Atlanta. We beat Georgia Tech in the Omni, and then we beat Kentucky in Atlanta. So we beat the 1, 2, and 3 seeds in our region to get to the Final Four as an 11 seed. Purdue was a 6. But I think you just – you know, especially going to play against a team like Michigan State, one thing if you're going to play a team and you're going to get up and down and they want to score 90, you want to score 80, and you just play. I mean, it's kind of like if you're not careful, you go and you play Michigan State and they just bop you around and pop you here and pop you there, and you're like, oh, wow, this is like putting, you know, two tight ends and a fullback on the line of scrimmage, and it's going to knock you down and keep going. I mean, you got to be careful. This game might be more of a physical – this might even be more physical than a Tennessee game. It's just the styles that worry you for the LSU. If LSU can get the ball defensively and rebound it and go and make this thing an 85-65 game, that's great. But that's not where it's going to trend if Michigan State wants to have some success. So I just think it's unique. I mean, if they were playing another team up and down, I think this LSU team could stroll out there and just go. But they're going to have to do some things that they haven't done during the course of the year because they just don't play many teams like Michigan State.
And see, for me, Ricky, the biggest thing they have to do is avoid some of these second-half swoons. And I'm going to ask you to tell me what they can do to stunt some of that, but I'm sure if you knew the answer to that, you'd be making $3 or $4 million a year, right? But what can they do to really turn some of that tide? Because I think they do that against Michigan State. They're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, you know, the question is, and everyone asks, what happens? And I can tell you from a player standpoint, you don't take your foot off the gas pedal exactly, man, but you do have a tendency to say, that play, next play, not as urgent as it was before because we're up 16 or we're up 18 or we're up 14, whereas that play had a little more urgency when we were trying to take this thing from a 3-point lead to a 6-point lead or a 7-point lead to a 9-point lead, whatever it may be. So I'm not going to say it's complacency, but it's just human nature, I think, to kind of let up a little bit. Not that they're letting up, but it's just a different dynamic. But I think for LSU, they're just going to have to play each possession, because with the difference with a team like Michigan State is, okay, you come down, you take two possessions off. They're not going to go down on the other end. They're going to go down and score. They're not going to come back. And this is an older team. I mean, these are juniors and seniors, so redshirt seniors when you look at what they're playing. These guys are going to, you know, they're playing a rugged. Every possession counts Big Ten. Not that the SEC is not, but SEC is a little more transition. I think LSU just has to endure the duration of 40 minutes. We say sometimes the game can be too long for some teams. You just hope for LSU's sake it's not too long, because they have to battle possession by possession. And the way you avoid all that is you get out and you score and transition and you create turnovers where Michigan State can't execute in the half court. And I think that's where LSU has somewhat of an advantage. They have, on paper, to have more athletes than Michigan State.
We'll get you out of here on this one, Ricky. Highlight one LSU player not named Waters or Reed that has to play big for them to win this game.
I think as well, and he's my second MVP on this team behind Skyler, I think Cavell is, as always, he's an X factor, because when you watch it from the perspective of a player, or if you're out on the floor, he's the guy that does everything that allows all those other guys to succeed. He protects the rim, he rebounds, he finishes missed shots, he goes in transition. So, you know, Cavell is that guy that I want on my team, because he gives me that layup in transition because he got a block shot. He gives me an opportunity to make that 15-footer because he got an offensive rebound. He guards the post, or if I get beat off the dribble, he steps up and makes that guy who just beat me pass it instead of score. So I think this type of game, again, Cavell, if he just does what he's been doing, he's going to have a big impact on the game.
Can't wait for Friday. I know we got 4 days to go, but thanks for helping us to, I guess, pump the prime a little bit here. Ricky, thank you again. Enjoy your week.
Same, Ben. Take care. Bye-bye.
You got to love it. Clint even found a way to get so excited, switched up some words. You can't pump the prime. You got to prime the pump, baby. And when we come back, we're going to ask a very important question, switching gears a little bit, related to Rob Gronkowski's retirement. And as we head to a break, it was great to have Ricky, definitely a student of the game when he played. That's why he became a coach. You've got two more days to nominate your favorite student athlete, a high school boy, a high school girl from this Acadiana area, and you got to tell us why. Go to 1037thegame.com. You'll see the featured image. You click on it, fill out the information, and tell us why. We'll take nominations through tomorrow evening. And then Wednesday of this week, we're going to share with you the winners for the month of March. One young man, one young woman. It's the 1037 The Game Student Athlete of the Month, and it's brought to you by Artco Equipment. We're coming right back in. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Well, I had never thought of it that way.
But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 1037 The Game.
What, do we steal this from the rap game with RP3? Bumper to Bumper Sports back in on 1037 The Game. In fairness, I had Tupac since the advent of B2BS.
I was about to say, he stole it from us.
Maybe he stole it from us. Chicken and egg situation going on. All right, I got a question coming at you. With the news this weekend that Rob Gronkowski is hanging it up, and shouldn't we all be so lucky, by the way? I know, he's going to deal with injuries probably for the rest of his life. I get the wear and tear on the body part, but to be 29 years old, have played 9 seasons in the league, and look, this part is not good fortune. It's just good planning. The dude didn't spend a dime of his contract that he made through 9 years. So, yes, set up very well for life after football. It got me thinking to his place in history, and then that led me to an important question.
Exciting and new.
Your sink or swim question of the day: is Gronk the greatest tight end of all time? think on it, quantify it, qualify it, however you want. Just make sure you call. We got a half hour where we can explore the space here. Is Gronk the best to ever do it at tight end? Whenever you're ready. 706-0111. CD, I will give you honors.
I'm going sink here, Ben, just because how can you compare what Gronkowski has done? Yes, it's 9 years, but at the same time, comparing that to a guy like Tony Gonzalez, who I still feel like is the greatest tight end of all time, I definitely think that he can't be touched because there's not enough body of work. 9 years is a large resume, but compared to what Tony Gonzalez did with the parts that he was playing with, especially in his prime in KC, I think that's definitely enough of a reason to say, hey, Tony Gonzalez is still the greatest of all time in the tight end position.
It gets difficult because I do think it takes more qualifying than quantifying. Because if I want to go by the numbers, and I'll share some with you here, I can make the case that the greatest touchdown-producing tight end of all time, because the numbers say so, is Antonio Gates. 116 touchdowns in less. Well, let's see here. He had 955 catches, 116 touchdowns. It's astounding, the percentage of touchdowns to catches. So Antonio Gates is the greatest touchdown maker of all time for a tight end. Your all-time yards king? And dude, it ain't even close. It is Tony Gonzalez. I'll put it to you this way. The second closest tight end, this really is mind-boggling. Work with me. I know. Numbers on radio time. Antonio Gates, 11,800. It's a rough number. 11,800. That's a hell of a lot. Tony Gonzalez, 15,100. It's not even in the same hemisphere. Tony Gonzalez just absolutely owned it in terms of moving the football through the air for a tight end. But I do think that qualifying it is more important than quantifying it. Here's what I mean. Who's actually blocking out of some of these guys? I'm serious. I'm not trying to be a hater, but Tony Gonzalez, not known as a guy who really was trying to, I guess, push the envelope or evolve the position in terms of dual threat, blocking and pass catching. Because once you start to throw some of those terms and qualifiers in, you got to at least consider Mike Ditka. You got to at least consider Shannon Sharp. Now, there are some other pass catchers out there through the years that were really good. Kellen Winslow's in that mold. Ozzie Newsome is in that mold. And look, if you were doing the best tight end turned GM of all time, yeah, it's Ozzie, and it's not even close. He might be the only one, but he's damn good at the GM part, what he's done building a couple of times over the Baltimore Ravens into Super Bowl champs. But I think even when you add everything up, it's not Gronk. And so, yes, CD, I'm with you. I'm going to sink. But when you consider the fact that you need to be dual purpose, right? Run blocking and pass catching, he's one of the best fusions that we've ever seen. Now, a little bit like Barry Sanders, Jim Brown at the running back position, we're not going to know his fullest potential in terms of the numbers. He only played 9 seasons. But I think Tony Gonzalez will get the nod for me here as well. But it's not convincing. Because everything I remember about the Tony Gonzalez that played for the Chiefs, especially the elder statesman who was lining up with Matty Ice in Atlanta, that guy wasn't exactly making his bones by throwing people around like a rag doll. Defensive ends, outside linebackers, middle linebackers. I just don't recall. And maybe some of you will call me and tell me that my recollection is poo. But I don't remember Tony Gonzalez being a very worthy run blocker. What say you? We got time. 706-0111. Gronk is a top 3 tight end of all time. I just don't think he's the greatest. And we've got some good response so far on social media. I got to share this one. Our friend Corey Lynn Landry took a break from playing at the Taproom River Ranch to give us this. This is sink all day. Come on. Laugh out loud. Tony Gonzalez won't be touched. Gronk has Brady his whole career. Look at Jimmy Graham. Leave Nola and his pedestrian at best. Gonzalez had nobodies in Kansas City, and I mean Matt Ryan, eh. Not bad for Corey Lynn Landry there, basically telling Matt Ryan to blow it out his trumpet. Music reference. We've got another one. I guess we used his full name there, Clint. Did I violate the trust of what we agreed upon, or since he's a musician, he answers to a, a higher power, not an actual boss.
Yeah, I'm about to say okay. I would agree with that statement. Also, he's a friend of the program, so we're good with that.
Yeah, I don't know, who do you narc on somebody to if they're a musician? Like, is Keith Richards going to come down and just smite you? You're going to be fine, Corey. Jacob F. There we go. We're back to procedure.
There we go.
Great, not greatest. I'm there with you. I'm there with you on Gronk. Great, not greatest. And if you want to know how prolific Gronk was, again, numbers on radio time. The man played in 115 games and had 79 touchdown receptions. I think we can all recognize that pace is torrid and is one of the best we've ever seen in the history of the NFL. Yes, he played with one of the best two or three quarterbacks of all time. Yes, he played with the greatest head coach of all time. But the guy was someone that they relied on in run blocking, in pass catching, and apparently he's only relevant when I ask this question on social media. I hear your crickets. I'm going to throw it to a break. That's how I respond. We'll come back. We can go back in on that if you want. Otherwise, I do want to re-rank the 16 teams that are left in the big dance. Might surprise you where I've got LSU. I'm curious where you would have the Tigers as well. But there definitely would be a shakeup in terms of form for some of the teams that we thought were the big dogs coming in and others who maybe were an afterthought. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield,
but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Quarter to 5 o'clock, and wouldn't you know it, social media continuing to step up on this Gronk question. We'll revisit that, but before we do, I got a reminder for you. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. The reminder is about the weekly reboot podcast. It dropped late last night. A lot of positive reviews so far early this morning. I intentionally switched up the topic. I knew we'd talk a lot of LSU hoops today. I know we probably would be a little March Madness heavy. So the podcast this week is all about the Houston Astros, the long-term vision with the deals we've seen the last week with Alex Bregman, Justin Verlander over the weekend, 3-year contract extension, and then what this season will hold for the Astros and the MLB. I even gave a World Series prediction. So again, I encourage you to go check it out. It's less than 15 minutes, perfect for a commute. You know, once you get done listening to this show, you go to 103.7thegame.com or the free mobile app. Just click or tap on demand and check out your weekly reboot podcast. It's all about the Astros and the MLB this week, and it's brought to you by my friends at the Cigar Cove in Broussard. All right, CD, I mentioned we've had some good social media chatter. Still answering this question, is Gronk the greatest tight end of all time? Guy on Facebook, Sink, Shannon Sharp. I think you have to consider Shannon Sharp as a top 4 or 5 tight end of all time. Where he goes for you might be a little subjective, not objective after that. But the guy won 3 Super Bowls. He set the gold standard for me. I believe he was the first over 10,000 yards receiving for a tight end. Now that since has been eclipsed by Antonio Gates, Tony Gonzalez. 62 receiving touchdowns, that's still going to be good enough for 4th all-time between Gonzalez, Gates, and Gronks. 3 G's, multiple meanings intended there. So it's not bad, though, because Shannon Sharp, the numbers, the winning, and the blocking, and he did it coming out of unheralded Savannah State. We got one more from Facebook, and then we'll head out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Jamie says, I hate the Pats. That being said, absolutely. No one, not even Gonzalez, dominated the position like Gronk. In terms of running or blocking for the run and pass catching, I agree with that. So, again, it's kind of how you look at this one. I enjoy that response, though. I see the other side of it, too, Jamie. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. T, happy Monday to you. What you got for us?
Hey, Ben. I think Tony Gonzalez was a better tight end. Just my opinion. But there's one that never belongs in the broadcast booth again. That was pretty good, and that's Jason Witten. When he was healthy, he's the top five tight end. What do you think?
Ooh, that's a tough one. But there is a reason that he got demoted from the booth back to the Dallas Cowboys, and I don't think it's because the Cowboys really needed him all that much. I think that was a parachute, but I'll address that. Thank you for the question, T.
Hey, one more thing, Ben.
Yeah, hit me.
You got time?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, LSU basketball. I watched Michigan State. We're going to have to play a complete game or be up by 30 at halftime to win.
And I think the complete game part is the more likely route. But you're not wrong. If they go up big or if they go up at all and then they fall into one of those swoons, I think they're done on Friday night. Thanks, T.
Hey, love your show, Ben. Keep it up.
Let's address both, and we'll keep taking more calls. 706-0111. This much I promise you. We got Ruff and Rodri coming aboard in just about 25 minutes from right now. So if we don't get to re-ranking the Sweet 16 teams in this segment, we'll do a top of the 5 o'clock hour. Is Jason Witten a top five tight end of all time, as T? First blush, I'm going to say no. I'm going to give you the three G's. I kind of like the sound of that. In some order, these guys I think belong in the top five, top six. Gronk, Gonzalez, Gates. Kind of hard to argue against that in my opinion. I would throw Shannon Sharp into that mix as well. And then from there, it just kind of depends. You know, what's your pleasure, right? You go on Ozzie Newsome, you go on Mike Ditka. Those are guys for me that would probably kind of fall next in line. But in there with them, I recognize he might be the caboose on this train is Jason Witten. But I would probably put Witten ahead of, say, Kellen Winslow. Witten's a better run blocker. I'd probably put him ahead of maybe John Mackey, some of the other names that you're going to float on a list like this. So it's a good question from T, but I'm going to say outside looking in, Jason Witten, top five tight ends of all time.
How much did his injuries towards the end of his career kind of play in that in your thought process just at first glance? Because he had a lot of injuries towards the tail end.
Not a ton. I mean, I remember him when he was healthy, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like I was too young to remember a healthy, vital Jason Witten. I guess my question would be this. I'll probably get some hate from the Cowboys fans with this. At peak performance, is there really that much of a difference between Jason Witten and Greg Olsen? Just for example.
That's a good point.
I would argue no. At peak performance, because
yeah.
Greg Olsen's a guy who has had tons of toe and ankle injuries.
Especially
trust
the last
me,
like 2 or 3 years.
Ask my fantasy team for the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
I don't think there's that big of a difference between Olsen and Witten. And I'm really not even contemplating the conversation of Greg Olsen as the top five tight end of all time.
Oh, no.
Nobody is. So I guess that's my point. If there's not much of a discrepancy there, I don't know. The other thing I would say, Cowboys fans are absolutely writing no Christmas cards to the Love household this year after this. Tony Romo helped to make Jason Witten a bit of a volume scorer in a Carmelo Anthony type way. There, I said it. A lot of those Cowboys teams pre-Zeke Elliott, just think about that little window of time, and it wasn't so little now that I think about it, but post-Emmitt Smith, pre-Zeke Elliott. Boy, they look. You hear the saying all the time, right? Run for fun, throw for dough. For a long time, the Cowboys threw for fun and for dough. That's just kind of all they did. And so I think, look, Witten's a phenomenal talent. I don't want to denigrate him too much here. But I think that Romo and the volume passing helped to make some of those stats. Now, having said that, Jason Witten was the top five run-blocking tight end of all time, T. That part, I don't doubt. Mike Ditka, Shannon Sharp, and then maybe a guy like Jason Witten. If I'm just doing run-blocking tight ends, that's my very early Mount Rushmore. And that's like the most niched, most kind of sad Mount Rushmore of all time. Best run-blocking tight ends ever. So I'm sad to have to formulate that list, but I just did it for you on the fly. T also asked about LSU basketball. Have to be up by 30 at half or they're screwed. Well, I get where you're coming from there, but I think we can all agree that's not very likely, right? Michigan State's too good for that. I think what's more likely is that LSU takes some of the physical play that Ricky Blanton told you is coming with Tom Izzo's Spartans. Veteran group, juniors, seniors, even one redshirt senior that's in there. How different is that than the Maryland team that LSU just played? But I think the more likely scenario for an LSU victory, T, is that LSU absorbs some of the metaphorical and maybe even literal punches in the mouth, takes it, and then in a Balboa versus Drago-style fashion, although the odds aren't that much stacked against LSU, but you get my point, eventually they come firing back. Might be a little bit more Balboa against Apollo Creed. If they take it, they come back, they show they're not backing down, and the second half is more akin to LSU-Kentucky, where it's nip-tuck, back forth, that's a game LSU can win. But if they go up 5 or 10 and they swoon in the second half, they will get avalanched under. At least that's my opinion. All right, back out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Keith wants to go in for our sink or swim question. Hit us, Keith.
I'm going, I'm a sink with caution. I put Tony Gonzalez number one, mostly because of his durability, especially at the age and the years he was playing at the position. He was such a durable guy. It's a shame he couldn't get a Super Bowl ring, and which I think that's why Gronk is ahead of him. But as far as route running, I mean, he was just the smoothest, the best. He was unguardable. He could do some of the same things Gronk could do. He could spread the field. He could jump. He can catch with the best of them. And six All-Pros is nothing to laugh at.
No, not at all. Six All-Pros, all of the winning that he did, you can't attach all of that to just proximity to Brady and Belichick. So I'm with you. Gronk is up there probably top three of all time for me. But it gets difficult once you get to that type of altitude, right?
Yeah, most definitely. I have Gronk right under him, but I put Gonzalez for the longevity and just the All-Pros. He was the best.
No, that's fair. Best of his generation. Thanks, Keith.
You got it.
And I mixed up a little bit of that, but I think Keith caught what I was pitching there eventually. Yes, the six All-Pros are for Gonzalez, so excuse me. But the greatness of Gronk can't just be limited to the quarterback and the head coach. Hey, we've got one submission that's come in via the Twitter machine. Joey asks Dave Casper, of Raiders fame. Certainly. Goes to the post. Famous play, 1977. I was 8 years from being born, but I have Google and YouTube. So, yes, right there with you. The raw numbers aren't exactly going to light up like some of these other guys of his era, a la Kellen Winslow, who played in the Air Coryell era, right? Where it was, again, kind of like I said with Tony Romo, pass heavy, numbers inflated a little bit. But that's not a bad submission at all. I might have to rethink this a little, Clint, because we've gotten some good input so far. Why don't you give us an update on the Twitter machine? What do we have? The sink or swim question of the day. How about percentages? Is it sink or is it swim in the lead?
It's 60-40 right now, Ben, in favor of swim. Definitely a little highly contested.
All right. So 3 out of 5 people believe that Gronk is the best tight end of all time.
Yes.
The hard part here is I don't think it's fair to prorate. You know, just because he did what he did in 9 seasons, we all recognize how impressive it is. It's not fair to say, all right, double that, and then let's compare that against Tony Gonzalez. Because then you get right back to Keith's point, the durability of Tony G. It's not fair to say, well, let's double up Gronk's numbers. Well, no. What, are you going to regenerate his knees when they fall off one day? You can't do that. You got what you got. And they squeeze the Patriots just about the most they could out of one of the most gifted physical specimens to ever play the position. That, I don't think any of us are doubting. All right, CD, we got 3 hours today. Let's end hour number one in style.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make 2 chairs turn.
Return man. It was announced earlier today that the Saints have signed 8-year pro. He's a cornerback and a punt returner. Marcus Sherrills has spent his entire career with the Minnesota Vikings after he went undrafted 2010 out of the University of Minnesota. He's only started 6 games in 120 played, so he's not playing much on the defensive side, but he averages 10.5 yards per return, and he's got 5 touchdowns brought back as a punt returner. So he's the return man for the Saints now. He's also Tommy Lee Lewis's replacement. Bumper to Bumper Sports coming back on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. It's good to be back here inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Hell, it's been a week. You already know, but this is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Yes, LSU and UL played baseball this past weekend. No, it's not worth writing home about, but we will get to it later in the program. What I'd rather do, what we're going to do, is leap in to the big dance. The 16 combatants that are left standing, entering the round of 16, the Sweet 16. And we're going to rank the 16 teams. Consider it a power ranking. What does that mean? I'm not taking into consideration matchups, the path they have left, the locations where they're playing. This isn't most likely to win in advance. This is almost strictly based on how they look. Goes back to that F word I always use. Get your mind out of the gutter. Form. This goes back to their form. How do they look? It's the bowling ball test, if you've been listening to this show long enough. I'm going to share with you some of my thoughts. I'm going to break it down in quadrants of four, and I'll give you 1 to 16. Clint will share some of his thoughts on teams that I have over, undervalued, in his opinion. And as always, we welcome your judgments. 706-0111 is the number to play. Don't forget, we got Ruff and Rodri coming aboard in our next segment. And by the way, the composition of the teams that are left, this says a little something about strength of conference, doesn't it? You got 5 ACC teams left dancing, 4 from the SEC, 3 from the Big Ten. And a lot of those will be represented toward the top of this list. Clint, number one for me right now is North Carolina. And some of the other number ones haven't looked as convincing. I'm not sure that UNC has played a world beater yet, and they were a little sloppy in beating Iona by 15 in its opening game, but they dusted off ninth-seeded Washington by 22 points. And as much as we talk about Michigan State being built for March, UNC under Roy Williams is usually just a magnet to the Final Four. And so UNC right now would be my power-ranked number one as I'm reshuffling the deck. Number two for me, and they've made a statement that I had to kind of stand up and take notice of, I would put Gonzaga at number two. Again, I'm not going to put a lot of stock into a 1 versus 16 matchup versus Fairleigh Dickinson, but they beat the Dickinson out of Baylor in the second round. Baylor's a pretty good team. Gonzaga is showing why they were the only team this year to beat Duke when the Blue Devils were at full strength. And so Gonzaga would be my number two right now, and their stock is up in this tournament. Michigan would be my number three right now. Their stock is up in this tournament. They held Florida to 49 points in the round of 32. Are you kidding me? And convincingly beat Montana in their opener. John Beilein proving he's one of the top 3 or 4 March coaches we have in the game today. Is he one of the best 3 or 4 overall coaches, program leaders? I don't know. It's tough. Maybe not quite. But when it comes to leading a team through the final 6-game gauntlet, at least the first 5 games, John Beilein's one of the best we have in the game today. Give me Michigan at 3. I'm going to tell you that Duke is 4, and then I'm going to tell you that that's misleading. That's just form. That's based off of how they played so far. But we all watched that Duke game, and they sleptwalked at times yesterday. They got complacent at least 5 times that I could remember with the lead in the second half. And a lot like LSU, they went cutthroat committee when they had too late. So, CD, I'm not telling you that Duke, who I have cutting down the nets, I'm not telling you they're any less likely to win it all, but as I'm re-ranking these teams,
yeah,
I start UNC, Gonzaga, Michigan, Duke. Anything there really out of line for you?
No, it's pretty much in line with mine, mind you. I have Michigan at number 4. I understand they're probably the best defensive team in the tourney. That's why I have them at number 4. Duke, I've got number 1. I really want to downvote them.
I'm downvoting them for the UCF game. But
they were
a slightly lesser tap of a tap from being gone.
Yeah.
And UCF was not a juggernaut in the American Athletic Conference this year, right?
This isn't the football.
Houston won that league in the regular season. And you'll see where I have Houston here momentarily. And so that's my top four. I'll keep it going, and I'll pick up the pace a little bit because I know you want to know where the purple and gold are. Hate to tell you, but I got to keep going to get there. Give me Virginia at 5, Michigan State at 6, Florida State, and they've taken an uptick for me in this tournament so far. I got them at 7, and I've got Texas Tech at 8. Full disclosure, I have Texas Tech coming out of that West bracket, and I have since Jump Street, and they have done nothing to dissuade me. But Florida State, beating Murray State 90-62, you got my attention, right? I mean, they just dog-pounded the Racers yesterday. And John Morant, they just defensively knew exactly the right buttons to press. And so Virginia, to me, has been good, not great. Isn't that the story of Tony Bennett's team come March Madness? Michigan State has been pretty darn good. They were the top overall 2 seed coming in. So the fact that I've got them at 6 probably shouldn't be a surprise. Florida State, stock up. Texas Tech, they are who we thought they were, to quote the late, great Denny Green.
Yeah, with Florida State, I'm surprised you have them that low because I have them as number 5.
Okay.
They're the hottest team right now in this tournament to me. You talk about form. I mean, this team's only lost 2 games to Duke and UNC since like late January.
It's a fair point.
That's the biggest thing. I talked about it Saturday to the producers. Was that? That was one of the biggest reasons why I had them advancing to the Sweet 16.
And so I could see where you might flip-flop my 5 and 7.
Yeah.
I got Virginia at 5, Florida State at 7. Let's keep it going. We'll pick up with number 9. Stock up as well, Purdue. Again, if you didn't take notice of what they did to Villanova, I don't know how to help you. 87-61, Purdue has knocked out Old Dominion, only gave up 48 points to the Monarchs in that game, and then crushed the defending champs. So Purdue impressively into the Sweet 16, and suddenly Tennessee has a headache matchup on its hands. I have Purdue at 9, Kentucky at 10, LSU at 11, and the biggest stock up in the tournament yet, Oregon. The 12 seed, appropriately, I've got at number 12 as I'm re-ranking them right now. Purdue, I already outlined. Kentucky, it's a coin flip between Kentucky and LSU as I'm doing this power ranking. My only difference, I respect Wofford as an opponent more than I do Maryland as an opponent. That's a very unique challenge, taking on a 3-point barrage squad like Wofford. Kentucky was able to hold them off, so ever so slightly, I'll put Kentucky ahead of LSU. And then Oregon at 12, right now what they're doing speaks for itself. Now, they've got a chance to take down Virginia. And by the way, I kind of like their chances in that ball game. The Ducks like to get up and down a little bit. Virginia does not. A lot like LSU, Michigan State. It's a very contrasting matchup.
And I'll say this. We agree on one part, and that's Oregon at the 12th seed. And I don't know why. It just seems like an accurate rating right now. I understand they are the literal last 12th seed left in this tournament, but it just makes sense for them. That being said, with Kentucky, I actually have them ranked 8th.
Oregon is the only seed worse than 5th that remains in the tournament, so an incredible accomplishment. But I've got LSU right now as the 11th best team out of the 16 that are in based on form.
Okay.
Can they beat Michigan State Friday? You bet your backside. If Duke plays like they did yesterday and Cavell Bigby-Williams does his best Taco Fall impression, then LSU can absolutely go to Minneapolis. Don't hear this wrong. Just based on form, I got them at 11. Let's finish it out. The team that's taken maybe the biggest downturn so far for me, Tennessee. I had the Vols in my final game. I've got Tennessee winning the South bracket, beating North Carolina, and getting to the final in Minneapolis. They're going to have to play better to do that. Again, I think they're going to have their hands full with Purdue coming up this weekend. But I got Tennessee at 13. I've got Auburn coming off a spanking of Kansas at 14. Give me Virginia Tech at 15 and Houston. I agree with what Brian Snow said last week on this show. Houston has the lowest ceiling of any of these top 3 seeded teams in any quadrant of the bracket. So Tennessee, Auburn, Virginia Tech, Houston is how I wrap it up.
Yeah, I've got LSU at number 13. Houston, you have them at the bottom. I have them towards the middle at number 10 in my rankings. I just love what I've seen from Houston all year long.
Corey Davis is a baller.
Oh, yeah.
But they need some help.
They really do need some help, especially when you look at who they've got in the next round in Kentucky. It's definitely an uphill climb. My bottom three, Virginia Tech. Well, I feel like they just played nothing but jabronis the last 2 rounds. Auburn, I love what I've seen from Bruce Pearl and the Auburn Tigers, but I feel like the clock's going to strike midnight on this team sooner rather than later. Than Purdue, I've got them at the bottom. I understand they want to come
over. You
got
Purdue at 16?
I do.
What in the actual hell?
I just feel like they're...
They crushed Villanova. I mean, didn't leave a doubt.
They did. But I just feel like that was almost, like, unusual. Mind you, I had Villanova going to the Final Four, and I was very disappointed, but I just still got to wind up saying Purdue 16 in my book.
When Purdue beats Tennessee, which, by the way, will implode my bracket, I'm not rooting for, but when it happens in a few days, because I'm starting to lean that way, you and I are going to have a word here. I'm going to have to call you to the principal's office. Right now, I got to throw it to our first break of the 5 o'clock hour, Ruff and Rodrigue. It's one of our best segments of the week, and it's coming up next. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
We're going back to our regular show, all right?
This is Acadiana's number one sports station,
and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
Right back in and ready to roll with one of our main men. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. It is time for Ruffin Rodrigue, owner of Rufino's on the River. How are you, Ruffin?
Yeah, doing fantastic, my man. How are you guys?
Life is good. People pretty pumped up about LSU into the Sweet 16. How was Saturday for you?
It was fantastic. I got to watch it with my dad and my family, you know, being a day game and getting ready for the night the restaurants. And, you know, just I said it with Jimmy and Charles on Friday at Rufino's in Baton Rouge, and I'll say it I'll see you on Fridays in Lafayette, that this team is a team that is very consistent. They're going to come out rolling first half. They're going to get a little lazy, a little lackadaisical with some shot selections and whatever. But it's almost like they want the drama, and they live for the drama. And who would have thought that Tremont Waters, everybody in America would have bet that he would have thrown up a NBA three-pointer. But he fakes everybody, and he. One of the sweetest little scoop-up layups you'll see in a while, and what a great finish.
Have you ever been a part of a team that kind of has that type of mentality, Ruffin? And look, even as I ask you that, man, they kind of remind me of some of the Les Miles-era teams after 2010. When they would get up, they just took their foot off the gas a little bit. Do you see that here?
Yeah, Les Miles is famous. His teams are famous for playing to the level of the opponent. That's what drove everybody crazy. And I don't know if it's playing level opponent. I just think it's consistently just, I don't know, they're doing something in the second half. I think at one point they missed 10 out of 11 shots in the second half. And it just seemed like the same old thing. You know, it's almost like home in a way, how good they were on the road this year. And then, you know, it's just a mentality that they have. It's a young team, but a tough team, you know, and I tell you, you got good leadership. Skylar Mays seems like a true-born leader, and they all rally around him. But, you know, when you got a big man as athletic as Reed and Big B. Williams, and then you have, you know, two guys that can drive, or three guys that can drive and get the foul or get the shot with the three guards. And I got to be honest with you, Ben, I don't know why he didn't play. My favorite player is Dave. I mean, I'd love to see his percentage. He seems like every time he shoots, he scores. Darius Days, and you know, I give him the ball a lot more. He just seems like he's a great little shot shotter. And I like this. You know, I didn't get a chance to watch Michigan State, but I saw their season, and they look like a typical Tom Izzo team. But you know, sometimes you have a team with destiny, man. We saw it with John Brady. We saw it with Dale Brown. And I was hoping we'd see it with Will Wade, but, you know, Coach Benford looks like he knows what he's doing. And one more game, and we're in the Elite Eight.
A couple of things, Ruffin, and I'm glad you mentioned Darius Days. There are some players that once all the stars leave and go pro, that guy who's next in line, he doesn't shine as much without them, right? He was meant to be a complimentary guy through and through. I think the opposite's going to end up being true of Days. Once Reed and Waters and some of the guys that command shots leave this team and go pro, whatever they do, I think Darius Days is going to be an all-SEC caliber player before he's gone. So it's going to be fun to watch him grow. I want to ask you this. I believe you were on campus in 86 when Ricky Blanton and LSU went to the Final Four. What are your memories of that?
I mentioned that last Friday on the show where I said, man, I really, really want to see Nod Reed versus Zion Williamson. And they everybody's, oh, wow. No. People, look, do y'all not remember? Charles is my age, Haniger. I said, Charles, do you not remember Ricky Blanton against the center from Memphis? I think it was Bedford. And then the center from Georgetown, or Kentucky center. And Ricky, I think they had Ricky by 7 inches or something. They were 7 foot. Ricky's 6'5", tops. And he outplayed them. I mean, he muscled them. He got inside their heads. And they went to the Final Four. And Ricky's the toughest player I've ever seen on a basketball court. For a guy with his size to play, to do what he did in his career at LSU was just nothing short of just amazing. And, it was fun to watch a guy that tough play against, guys that had NBA, great NBA careers and see a team have that much fun. It was just fun. That was when it was really fun to watch.
Hey, right before you came on, Ruffin, I saw a post, social media, Ruffino's on the River, reminding everybody about how great the celebration salad is. So I know, when people go to 921 Camellia, they think about the steaks. But, look, that celebration salad, especially Fridays in Lent, leading into some of the other Lent-friendly options on the menu, so many great things you can eat there.
Yeah, the chefs, James Esteban, all the guys in the kitchen, Chef Brandon, they have so much passion for flavor, and you go to the salad station, which is right by the chef's counter. When you walk in, there's some bar stools. You can sit up there and watch them make desserts and salads. And, they really take their time and they interact with the guests. And the sensation, the celebration salad was actually what TD Moran was our partner. I wanted to name it Allison. My wife's name's Allison, and she was just addicted to it. So I wanted to call it Allison. And he said, are you nuts? He said, you'll get divorced by next year if you name it after your wife. It's bad luck. So we named it Celebration. And, it's got that little bit of hint of sweetness. But it's it's got the pecans and the variety of things with the spinach, and it's I'm a salad guy lately, watching my inner tube around my belly grow during football season and the Christmas holidays. So that's a great salad to have. And just the staff right now is just, as you said, they're having so much fun. The bar is packed. The energy of Ruffino's is back, and the view of the river and all the parties that the celebrations, anniversaries and birthdays are just so much fun to go and watch.
And starting in April, we're going to keep that mojo going on Friday nights. More on that in a moment. I know we've talked about this before, Ruffin, but I got to be honest, I haven't gotten to go to the Ponderosa yet this year. With the time of my show, it's kind of tough to do that. Anything you want to share that you're hearing when it comes to Joe Brady, Steve Ensminger, and that offense?
For the first time, in the first spring I can remember, I had been in the practice myself. I just been so busy with, not as changing, not ownership, but buying out my partner and doing some things in the restaurant and just having so much fun at work. I really haven't had a chance to go to any of the practices. The other night I talked to a couple of guys that go to a bunch of practices, and they say Brady is bringing a new dimension to the way they do things, their packages, the way they mix things up. I said it before, about the Saints, Sean Payton and his coaching staff. I've never seen a team, an offense, receivers get so open so often every game. And Breeze just sitting back there and just, be able to step up and just they just seem like these free agents they sign every year, they just continually get open. Like nobody can cover them. And it's the packages. It's the Brainiac of Sean Payton, And when you can get a guy like Brady, because Brady would come in and hopefully bring that extra edge that we need. Get a cool cat like Joe Burrow back there, man. You can make him an all-SEC player overnight if he can get these big receivers open, you know. And that's what LSU's been missing. And if we get that rolling with the defense staff we have, this could be one special team next couple of years.
Hey, this will be a little bit out of left field, but I want to end with Rob Gronkowski announcing his retirement. 29 years old, only 9 seasons in the league, but incredibly prolific. How will you remember Gronk's career?
You know, speaking of my wife, she called me earlier and asked me why he was retired. And I said, I don't know the guy that well. I met him once. He came to Baton Rouge, and he was at Bogey's of all places. And he'd swung by the restaurant before, and he's just a monster. And I love taking his shirt off, you know, and pouring beer all over himself. I don't know why. Well, I guess because we do. But
sure.
He's injury prone, mate. That's got to be the one thing. He seems like every season it's another injury or, you know. And football is a, you know, you take it to the NFL. Yeah, you get paid, but it's work, and it's stressful, and it can really weigh on you if you're injured all the time and you know. And he's made a bunch of money, but it could be something with his family. He may want to settle down and have children. It's not an easy life for a guy in that position, a tight end, to get banged around if you want to have a family and, you know, get your head knocked around. Take a guy like Donnie Jones, my buddy who's a punter, who lives in Baton Rouge. He just signed again with San Diego, and he's punts the ball. I mean, he's having a ball because he knows his injury the chance of injury is not very good. I mean, you're a tight end in the NFL, and the linebackers, you want Devin White coming across and smacking you around. You know, it's work and it's hard, and I can see why a guy would just say, you know what, I had enough.
Nothing hard about this, brother. Just great radio every Monday, and we'll be converting it to Friday soon. But you know, I'm looking forward to everything we have coming down the pipe. Thanks, Ruffin.
Okay, Ben, you have a great day, my man.
That's Ruffin Rodrigue, owner of Rufino's on the River. I will have a date for you shortly, but beginning in April, we're still picking the first Friday to kick this thing off. We're going to be doing weekly shows of B2BS at Rufino's on the River. Already discussions in the works of making a special little package. You come out, you see the show. It's not quite dinner time yet. We get that. They're going to have something packaged up. It's going to be affordable. An app, a drink. Come watch Ben Ruffin and B2BS live at Rufino's on the River. You think I'm excited about that? Just a little bit. We're coming right back in. Throwing shade. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
The famous Clint D says something none of us will agree with.
Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Here we go, back in with more B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Phone lines open for the next half hour. We are taking you at straight up 6 o'clock to East Lansing, Michigan. We're going to talk with Hondo Carpenter, SpartanNation.com. Over the years, I've done a good bit of radio with him up in the home of Sparty. Glad to have Hondo Carpenter with us on the Bayou. Again, that'll be at 6 o'clock. And in a moment, I'm just about ready to throw shade. In fact, I'm really close to being ready to throw shade. But before we do that, Clint, I can't let that one little nugget that Ruffin Rodrigue gave us completely pass. You did hear that, right? That when Gronk went to Baton Rouge, he went to Bogey's?
Yeah.
Bro, come to Karen Crow. Go to Pogey's.
Yes.
What's wrong with you?
Hashtag as expected, though. Let's be honest. Him going over there. Like that should be no surprise at all, am I right?
The biggest grown child of all time, spending one night in Baton Rouge, at least in part in Bogey's. Well, yeah, that Ruffin killed me with that line.
Yeah, exactly.
He likes doing that, I guess, because we like it when he does that.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like
him and Coach O would fit well together.
It's like any child. Yeah, but they probably take their shirts off for different reasons.
Yes.
One of them wants the rage, and the other is, you know, There's getting paid and there's getting laid, and Gronk does both.
Yes.
And the latter is why he takes his shirt off. So if a behavior is continuously rewarded, I suppose that behavior just gets perpetuated more and more and more until one day you can't do that anymore. So I wouldn't know. I don't go to bars and take my shirt off anymore, but Gronk does. And I guess if I were Gronk, I would have to consider that as well. Enough of that. It's time for your daily reminder. Please, God, let's move away from that. It's your PSA locally. That no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the Cypress accents. And know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home. And in 2019, how important is that? You could trust Alex to take care of your home and then to beautify life outside of it with the shades and the awnings, while Todd, he'll be the one putting up the patio covers and those customizable screen rooms. Collectively, the pros at Patio Center, they're ready to up your patio game. And all it takes to start, a trip to patiocenter.com. The kings of customization, it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
There are rumblings that Trey Waters traveled on the final play, at least LSU's final play of that ball game, right? The game-winning layup with 1.6 seconds to go. I watch a lot of NBA basketball, not as much as I used to in my life, but still a good bit. I watch traveling on a regular basis when I watch NBA basketball. There is not a doubt in my mind that what Trey Waters did Saturday in Jacksonville was legal. And yet, there have been haters coming out of the woodwork saying that Waters traveled. Here's what Trey said in response to those accusations.
So when I looked at the replay, did you think you walked at all, or kind of the way you cupped the ball, did it look like a good shot to you, or felt good? Huh? No, I'm just saying, that's what some people were saying.
The ball went through the basket. So, like I said, whatever people want to say outside of what's happening on the court, then that's on them. The ref said it was a two-point basket. It was a two-point basket.
We might have to isolate that laugh at the beginning of that. Look, I've asked a lot of questions. I've interviewed a lot of student athletes, not just at LSU, but all over the country. I have had questions laughed at before. Most of the times, I kind of knew what I was getting into. Almost sheepishly, I expected it to happen. I don't think I've ever had a question that was responded to quite like that. Just bold-faced laugh right at you. So Trey Waters throwing the shade, answering with the laugh. The ref said 2 points. Basically, get out of here, you clown. CD, I've got a take two on this. You and I talk all the time about it's usually the college football national championship game, and they pick that one song and then they beat the hell out of it.
Yep.
And they just send that dead horse through the ground.
Yeah.
You know, Imagine Dragons, Whatever It Takes.
Natural, yeah.
You know, that type of song. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about here.
Oh, yes.
What's the song? Oh, man, it's been 4 years, so it finally has been stamped out of my brain. But Remember Me for Centuries.
Yeah, Fall Out Boy. Yes.
Good night alive. They play it in and out of every single break. Okay.
The same with Gimme Shelter a couple years ago.
Yeah, but
still a good song.
But I like that song. Anyway.
But it was beating in our brains for 3 hours.
It's true. In that same vein, I'm not going to drink orange vanilla Coke, and you can't make me drink orange vanilla Coke. I'm not going to do it. Stop playing the commercial.
Yes.
Just stop it.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
I was actually in and out of Baton Rouge this weekend. Had to go see a friend there. Good visit. At least until I was going back to Lafayette. And then I saw the orange vanilla Diet Coke billboard. And I was like, they're everywhere. Big Brother is everywhere on this one.
Orange vanilla Coke is everywhere.
Every time that I turn on the tournament, they're convincing me that I need to be drinking orange vanilla Coke. I'm just not going to. But when I saw that billboard, I'm just driving this thing right off the Mississippi River Bridge. Honey, it's been a good 34 years for me. What, 30 for you, I guess? But this is my line in the sand. I don't want to live anymore in a world where I have to drink orange vanilla Diet Coke or Coke. I'm not going to. Stop running the commercial, Tailor My Television for alternative programming. All right, we got to sit it now to the final break in the hour, except I'm really not joking. When we return, we didn't have Jace Conrad today. Our dude's been busy, but we will get you some Raging Cajun baseball conversation. The latest on Gunnar Leger from assistant coach Anthony Babineau. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
Here we go. Final run in our 5 o'clock hour. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben and Clint bringing you home on 103.7 The Game. In about 15 minutes, we are taking you to East Lansing, Michigan. Hondo Carpenter, our first scouting report of the week on the Michigan State Spartans. And yes, during the 6 o'clock hour, we plan to talk a good bit of baseball. We'll dive into LSU's pitching issues, give you an update on Jaden Hill, and talk a little bit about how the Tigers attempt to bounce back, going from the home of one SEC Bulldogs group to another this coming weekend. We're also going to talk Astros and MLB baseball in our third hour. But considering in our 5 o'clock hour, Mondays, we typically have Jace Conrad on the program, you're probably used to getting some Cajuns baseball fix. We're going to make sure we fill you up with that goodness right about now. What's happening on the field? Not so much goodness. 2 out of 3 dropped to, let's face it, a pretty mediocre, if not worse, App State baseball team in the Sun Belt. And so suddenly this year, the Cajuns might just have to battle back from being a bottom half of the SBC team. Still looking up at 500 overall with the record. And most notably, in terms of star power, in terms of pitching, Gunnar Leger didn't go against App State. And Clint told me at one point last week he had heard that was going to be the case. It was released not long before the game that he wouldn't go. Ultimately, that's what happened. Earlier today, Anthony Babineau, assistant for UL Baseball, gave an update on senior pitcher Gunnar Leger.
I have no idea if Gunnar is back on track for Friday. I don't think any of us, you know, have any idea if he is back on track or not. You know, the thing with Gunnar, before the season started, our hope was that he was going to be able to be, you know, obviously a consistent arm for us that could go out there every Friday night. That hasn't been the case. You know, up until this point, it's been every other weekend. And right now, we're really not sure. You know, he has some tightness. I don't know if he does today. I have not seen him today. I have not spoken to Coach Robichaud today, who's at the hospital with his father, who's having surgery today. But so we haven't been able to get together as a staff to talk about any of those things yet. So I do not know if he's on track for this Friday. What I do know, what has been discussed, that when he does return, it will more than likely be in a bullpen role. It'll probably be in a relief role. Because to date, he hasn't been able to, as you guys know, go for more than 5 innings, you know, and reach that pitch count of about 75 pitches, where his forearm will start to tighten up a little bit. And so when he does come back, I'm pretty certain that it will be in a relief role.
And how about that for big news? For what it's worth, the Cajuns, tomorrow night, 6:30, first pitch, they're at home against Tulane, and then it's a Friday through Sunday set at Troy. Boy, that's not the way anybody wanted this thing to go. But before I even knew the news, CD, right?
Yeah.
When you first told me that they weren't sure he'd be able to go on a weekly basis anymore, my first thought is, wow, in the midst of an 11-14 overall season,
yep,
please don't risk the kid. And you know that Robe and company aren't going to do that. They got too much love for the kid, and they protect their kids in general. But I could see where this might be a viable path. How could he fit into this overall pitching blueprint coming out of the bullpen?
Oh, I think he definitely would fit extremely well as a bridge guy, because like Babineau said, he wound up pitching at the most 5 innings in a single game. That's typically what you would want out of a bridge guy. Hypothetically, you wound up at the most with him now, probably 3 to 4 innings would be your threshold. I think they'll be the ideal situation if you're head coach Tony Robichaud and everybody else. You want to see him in that role as a bridge guy to kind of bridge that gap between him and maybe Logan Savoy or Michael Loma, depending on what kind of day it is. Because those are the two guys that I've noticed being the real closers for this team.
Well, let's be candid about another thing. Sometimes bridge work isn't just to get you from the middle of the fifth inning through the eighth.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like you saw with Dalton Horton over the weekend, things go kaboom really early, and you have an oblique bridge guy is what I like to call it. You ever been riding in a vehicle and your shotgun, and there's that little handle?
Yeah, the oblique handle.
The oblique handle. Sometimes you need an oblique bridge guy. So when things go boom in your face real early, then, yeah, maybe Gunner can give you three or four in that type of situation. So we got a little bit more from Anthony Babineau on Gunner Leje, and kind of to the point that you just made reference to, CD, Babineau says Leje really could fit just about any role.
I think you're absolutely correct. There's some guys you're a little nervous about if they've been a reliever and then you have to turn them into a starter, or if they've started their whole career and then all of a sudden you need them to throw out of the bullpen. Some guys can do it. Some guys can do it not so great. Gunner's mentality, work ethic, whether he's in the ball game in the top or bottom of the first or top or bottom of the ninth, I really think it's no different for him because of his mentality.
We got a couple more from Cage's assistant baseball coach, Anthony Babineau. You can also call if you'd like. In a moment, we'll update the Sinkerswim question of the day. Is Gronk the greatest tight end of all time? In light of the news he's retiring, where does he rank in the pantheon? We got all that going on. When you're ready, 706-0111. But back to the Coach Bab sound. Leje, not the only pitcher on people's mind these days out at the tee. Austin Perrin. I'm interested to see what Bab has to say here, because a lot of different ways I think that they can go, but certainly they need the young man.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious, you know, how important that's been, because without the outings that Austin Perrin has been giving us, you know, I would really hate to even think about what would be going on if Perrin hadn't been as consistent as he has been, especially on the weekends. You know, every time he's been out, he's ate up innings, you know, 6-7-plus innings, really done a phenomenal job for us. So what he's done has been huge.
So, Clint, leading into that soundbite, when I say that there are a number of ways it can go, I mean, I'll just come out and say it. What I mean is he not your Friday night starter now?
I think he should be your Friday night starter, but the biggest thing is with Robe, and he's talked about it in the past, that was a big reason why he only moved him up to Saturday in that spot, is because of the fact you're kind of having to work one less day. He didn't want to push him up to Friday, and then you lose 2 days of rest.
The most important, I do see what you're saying.
Yeah.
How do you make that transition quite literally from 1 week to the other?
Yeah.
Sometimes we get lost in the thought of, well, you know, hey, it's a long season. Just get on track and you'll figure it out. I think this, the most important thing a Friday night starter can do is eat innings.
Yeah.
If you go to your bullpen early on Friday, you're so screwed for the rest of the weekend. I don't care if it's the Sun Belt or the SEC. It just doesn't matter. And if this guy's an inning eater, do what you can to get him as close to Friday, if not on Friday, as you can. I'd be surprised if he's not going Friday at Troy.
Let's not act like Jacob Schultz. He's pretty darn good as well. He wound up having
another
five
option.
Two thirds on Friday night as that Friday night starter, so he could wind up being a solid hand. But, of course, once you kind of see him maybe dip down a little bit for a couple starts like we've seen with Horton, that's the reason why Perrin's in the position he's in on Saturdays.
Let's take two. Boom. Baseball phrase from Rab before we exit stage left with this hour. He's got an update on Daniel LaHare.
He's a day-to-day as well. You know, he had a brace on the other day for I think it was a Saturday game. He took batting practice, moved around okay. We thought he was going to be good enough to go out there and play. Obviously, you could tell by his first at bat, he couldn't push off, couldn't run. So Daniel's a day-to-day type of injury.
Is that Bab beating the drum there?
Yes, that's kind of what he's doing right there. It was at the end of the press conference. He was just like, let's end this.
Answer a question?
Yeah.
Hit the drum?
This is the last question you
pass the conch.
Yes.
Now it's your turn. Let's do one more. From Coach Bab here, and this is big picture, and I get this. Like I said, Tulane coming up tomorrow at home. Then it's off to Troy. Cage is right now 3-3 in Sunbelt play, so they're looking to get back on good footing and try to get back toward the top of the Sun Belt. And really, they just want to get this losing taste out of their mouth.
Well, I don't think that it's more important than any other midweek game or any other game is, but, you know, it's our next game, and we do have a sour taste in our mouth right now for how yesterday ended. So, yes, we want to get back out there as soon as possible. You know, I really wish it was this afternoon, but we've got to wait till tomorrow. So, you know, I think our guys will be ready to get, you know, victory, that victory taste back in their mouth. And it was really tough yesterday because, you know, you go from potentially winning the series, you know, going 4-2 in conference to within a matter of 5-10 minutes, you know, you're on the bad end of that game. So very tough.
Good stuff from Anthony Babineau. Even if the baseball hasn't always been where people want it to be, they've still got a chance to battle back. Not throwing dirt on them yet, not even a little bit. Clint, we've got less than 90 seconds left in our hour. Okay. I had wanted to update the sink or swim question on Gronk, but I'm just seeing this news release, so I'll share it with the public now. Rod Walker is the first I've seen out with it from The Advocate. The Bears and Packers are going to play the season opener for the 2019 NFL season Thursday night, September the 5th. I thought that was always the defending champ. They're saying now the Pats are going to play Sunday night, week one. The opponent hasn't been announced yet, but Bears v. Packers is a great rivalry, so I'm not complaining, but
yeah.
I thought that was reserved for the champ.
It feels like it has been reserved for the champs for a long time, and as far as I can think, like back to after the Saints Super Bowl season, was like that was one of the ones I can remember being your opening night game. It's weird, but again, it's that old-school rivalry, and when you think about it, Ben, it's the 100th anniversary of the NFL. And I'm probably wrong on this, but if I'm not mistaken, these are one of the teams that were part of the original Green Bay and Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question that these are vintage teams and a vintage rivalry, maybe one of the oldest in the league. So I get it. I was just surprised by it. That's all I'm saying. All right, we are 2 hours down. The good news, we got one more to go. The even better news, when we return, let's learn about the Michigan State Spartans together. Hondo Carpenter going to join the program. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
Ready to roll, and here we go with hour number three. Ben Love joined by the famous Clint D, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports, taking you home on 1037 The Game. A lot of window dressing so far, as we've talked about what we think might happen. LSU versus Michigan State. Now it's time to actually ask an expert and learn some things of substance about Sparty. Let's get out to the ARTCO Equipment Hotline. Our guest, Hondo Carpenter, SpartanNation.com. Hondo, great to have you on here in South Louisiana. How are you today?
Ben, it is always good to be on with you, my friend. You are one of the classiest and best journalists in the country. I get to do so many interviews around the nation. I always love it when you call. You know I've had you on my shows. You're one of the best. It's a real privilege. And I love Lafayette. I've been there many, many times, spent a ton of time there, so it's a privilege and an honor. Thank you, my friend.
Well, thank you for coming on. And Cajun Nation, excited to have you here. And when we start to dissect this Michigan State team, to me, one thing that's interesting, what they've done and how they've responded really to the loss of Joshua Langford. Played only 13 games and some change. How has that changed the dynamic of their team, and how have they moved on from that loss?
Well, he's an NBA player. He's a McDonald's All-American. It was a huge loss. But then don't forget they lost Nick Ward for a big part of the season, Matt McQuaid for a big part of the season, Kyle Arnes, another starter, is out. You know, he's gone. He won't be playing. They've lost a ton of people. And the way that they've done it is how Tom Izzo has done it for so many years. It's just the sum of their parts. That describes Michigan State better than anyone. You know, they lost two NBA lottery picks last year, Miles Bridges, of course, and Jaren Jackson, and they just kept on going. They have five new freshmen, but none of them are big contributors. Aaron Henry has stepped up a little bit, but really none of them are big contributors. Kenny Goins, one of their best players, is a walk-on. Izzo always seems to have a couple of walk-ons that end up playing in the NBA or playing in pro basketball. This is another one of them. This team's some of their parts. They're very tough. They won't beat themselves. They're relentless. Matter of fact, I literally just stepped out of practice to take your call and was talking with Kenny Goins and Xavier Tillman. Your listeners can watch those interviews later tonight for 100% free at SpartanNation.com. And I asked them, this is an LSU team that likes to bang. Are you guys excited? Because that's the game you play. And they are. They're very excited. Ton of respect for LSU. A lot of respect for them. This is a team in Michigan State that plays anybody, anywhere. That's Izzo's mantra. And so they've played all the big games. This is not a stage at all that's too big for them. And they're going to come in absolutely ready to be physical and bang and run the ball from the moment they get off the bus. I think the key to this game is going to be LSU in transition. We know LSU can bang. We know this is a super talented team. But we also, I don't know that they've been tested the way they're going to be tested by Michigan State. I think it's going to be a fun matchup. And I was on a national radio show a moment ago, and someone, actually it was this morning, I apologize, not a moment ago, but they asked me, you know, do you think LSU, you know, can run with Michigan State? And I literally said to them, you don't get to the Sweet 16 because you suck. I mean, this is a very, very good LSU team. And I want to address one thing, and I want to say it on your show, because if I'm going to say it nationally, I better be man enough to come into Cajun Nation. I got a lot of friends that are Cajuns. I've been in Lafayette so many times. You know, I think it's sad what's gone on with your head coach. And if there's one thing I love about Louisiana and Cajun people, I am a redneck deer hunting sports fanatic in Michigan. And I love the passion of LSU fans. I love it. And one thing I love about LSU fans, though, is they're people of character and integrity. And if that coach did cheat, if he did, I don't think that's a reflection of the Cajun people. That's not how they operate. They want to win, honestly. You know, quite honestly, LSU's lost a lot of ball games over the years to teams that cheat. And I don't think it's a reflection of the people. I don't think it's a reflection of the university, the program. It could be one dirty guy, but it's not a reflection of them. These are good kids. This is a great university with great fans. I can't hardly wait. Get me to D.C. I want to see this game. I'm lucky I get a courtside seat because I'd buy a ticket for it if I didn't.
You got me fired up, my man. LSU, Michigan State in D.C. Friday night. Right now we're talking with Hondo Carpenter live from East Lansing, Michigan. All right, tell me about Cassius Winston, 19 points a game, 7.5 assists. He's the floor general. How has he developed from his freshman year until now as he's a junior?
Well, his freshman year, he was terrible. Absolutely terrible. And, you know, but that's because most freshmen who come into Tom Izzo's system are terrible as freshmen. You have to learn, you know, I remember when he was a freshman, Izzo grabbed the basketball and began screaming at him and said, "You're not in high school anymore. You are no longer the best player on this court. You need to quit acting like we can't win without you. We're going to win with you on the bench." And it took a while for Cassius to understand. I'm going to tell you what I love about Cassius Winston. And this is why I love doing shows. Put me on a radio show in Louisiana over a radio show in New York City the other week because I just relate to those good American folks. This is the kind of guy you want your daughter to come home with. He is a straight-A student, could have went to Harvard. Great player, great degree, loves the Lord, absolutely in love with the Lord, great family, and he loves the game. He's smart. He sees things that other people don't. I am in no way comparing him to Magic Johnson, so if anybody hears that, they're drunk. But what I am saying is Michigan State has not had a person who has seen the court as good as Magic, and I'm very good friends with Irvin, and Irvin agrees with me, oh, by the way. They've not had a point guard that sees the court. Michigan State pushes the ball in so many different ways, it frustrates people. That's why they're, you know, back-to-back 30-win seasons. They will run the ball in so many different scenarios. I believe that Louisiana, that LSU, Louisiana State, is a very good ball club. I don't necessarily believe that they've seen a team, and I don't think Michigan State feels this way, that runs the way they run. Most teams, if they're just a running team, they're not physical. Michigan State is physical now. It's going to be a battle. It's going to be fun. It's going to be like two big old alligators fighting in the bow. And so what's fun about it is they somehow are a physical team that loves to run. Most teams that love to run are not good rebounding teams. This is an excellent rebounding team. They're in the top 10 of the nation offensively and defensively. They love to do it all. And so what's going to be the adjustment? Now, I would really encourage Tiger fans to watch this. If Michigan State's getting out on the fast break, that's not good news for LSU. But if LSU is able to contain them and keep them out of that, then I think LSU's got a very good chance at the win. I don't think, and I'm going to tell you this, I've been around this program for a long time, Ben, and you know you've been on my shows. I've had you. I'm a straight shooter. I went on other shows and called for Michigan State when I thought they were going to lose. This is a game where LSU could very easily beat them if LSU is able to control tempo. If LSU tries to run with Michigan State, they're going to lose. They're big. They're physical. They are freakishly physical. In fact, that's several of the Spartan players today talked about on film, just how freakishly physical they are. There are a bunch of players on that LSU team that Tom Izzo would like to have at Michigan State because they play like an Izzo team. That's a very good – I mean, that is a complete compliment to your team. These are physical kids. Your kids are smart. They're very disciplined. I was watching some film today. Very disciplined. But I'm going to tell you where I think Michigan State has an edge. Michigan State is a Hall of Fame coach who's terrific at adjustments. And because you've got a guy that necessarily doesn't have the experience, I'm not saying he won't be a great coach. I'm not saying he isn't a great coach. But I think when you're going against Tom Izzo, that's about a 5-point advantage when you've got a coach maybe who isn't as experienced. And Tom's going to go into this game, you know, jokingly one of the players said today, I talked about putting a game plan together, and he said, well, which one? You know, we got 6 or 7, depending on if they adjust here, this is what we're going to do. They adjust there. So by the time a guy like Cassius Winston gets to be a junior, and he's the Big Ten Player of the Year, first-team All-American, he understands with one hand signal how to change the game plan because they've already learned it. They've already studied it. They've already got it down. I mean, here we are sitting here Monday, and they're already ready and thinking about changing the game plans on Friday. I think that helps Michigan State. One thing that Tom Izzo does that a lot of teams don't is if you're not a starter, then you're working the scout team. So you're getting great looks. So I literally sat in and watched practice today. And they're having starters, scholarship guys who will one day play in the NBA running that LSU offense. There's not a lot of teams that have that kind of depth. I mean, they have guys who are like Kenny Goins. I mean, this guy going to play in the NBA. He came here as a walk-on. He had several scholarship offers. That's common at Michigan State where you get a lot of guys who have scholarship offers from Division I schools to come here and walk on because Tom Izzo's proven if you can get in the rotation, we'll give you a scholarship. So it's going to help them that their scout team is full of great players. And so that helps them a little bit. And I think Tom Izzo's adjustments is going to be a big key for Michigan State. But, again, the running game. LSU loves to run. And sometimes you've got to be wise enough to understand, well, that other team loves to run too, so it may be wise for us not to do it. I have a good friend. You know who he has been, Brian Hoyer, the backup quarterback for the New England Patriots. Great quarterback, great friend of mine. And I remember him telling me, one of the things you learn when you go to the Patriots to play for Bill Belichick is that sports is simple. Don't overcomplicate it. And when they sit down with a defensive game plan for the Patriots, their defensive game plan is find out whatever the other team does best. Whatever it is, stop that. Make them beat you with what they don't do best. If I'm LSU going in this game, I'm going to make a decision. Yes, we like to run. But Michigan State is prolific at it. One of the best teams in the country with assists. They get up and down the court. They are fast. Their bigs will run the court. And that may not be a decision that we want to do. I think if LSU slows this game down, I think if they play this game 10 times, LSU would win 4, maybe 5. If they try to run with Michigan State and they played 10 times, I think LSU would win 1. So if I'm LSU, I'm going to say, wait a minute, I'm going to back off a little bit. I'm going to let my bigs bang. I'm going to let my bigs bang because you got some great ones. I'm going to use that terrific LSU point guard, let him get his bombs when they're there, and make this game an interesting contest. I love this LSU team. I really do. They play a lot like a Big Ten team. I wish y'all weren't in the SEC. I not only for basketball, I wish you weren't in there for football. I'd love to have you in the Big Ten. And I just think this is going to be a matchup. This is going to be a get-your-popcorn-out game.
We got another moment or two. Having fun with Hondo Carpenter. You need to read and watch his work. Just got out of practice. Go to SpartanNation.com. Hondo, LSU's MO has been very simple, although maddening for Tiger fans. They get out to a lead at halftime. At about the 16-minute mark of the second half, it starts to fall off a cliff. LSU fans hang on for dear life, and they win at the end. How does or doesn't that gel with the style of game that Michigan State typically plays?
Michigan State is relentless. You're going to love this. At the Big Ten tournament, I asked one of the Big Ten coaches off the record, and I promised him I wouldn't use his name, but he said I could use a quote. I said, how would you describe Michigan State? And this is what he said to me. He said, it's like Rocky Balboa. In every movie, he gets beat up, but he's just relentless, and he always wins. Michigan State is relentless. They will play 40 minutes. They're going to come in and just play, and they're going to keep plotting. They're going to keep coming at you. I fully expect LSU to get an early lead, and I'll tell you that right now. Michigan State's approach is we're going to come in and feel you out. We're going to figure out what your game plan is, and then we're going to adjust. We're going to adjust to you. This is the Tom Izzo being the Hall of Fame coach that he is. And when they let him adjust, then here they come. I'm going to say this to you. LSU is a very good basketball team, but so is Michigan State. They've been in the top 10 all year. Arguably, if they had not had all of the injuries that they did, I think we're looking at a team that probably would be favored for the national title or certainly in that argument. But you know what? The reality is nobody's entitled, and they had injuries, and that's the truth of what it is. If LSU lets up and they get a nice lead, and I expect them, I want to say it right now on your show, I expect LSU to get an early lead. If they get into that 16-point and they let down, they're not playing, you know, schools that are just glad to be in the 16 anymore. Michigan State's been there a ton of times. Tom Izzo's got more Final Fours than all Big Ten teams combined. Combined. He's got more. This is a school that's been there, done that. This is a team that's older. They got a lot of older guys on this team. They're loaded. They've played an unbelievable strength of schedule, one of the top in America. They've played everybody. So if you let off, that's fine with them because they're not. This is one of your, you know, I love the people of Louisiana, and this is what's saying that they'll all appreciate. This is grab your lunch pail and get out on the shrimp boat, and you're going to work all day. And what I love about Michigan State is I'm a free market capitalist. I'm not a socialist, and I believe that, you know, you got to earn what you get. That's Michigan State. They're going to bring their lunch pail and play 40 minutes. I believe if LSU does that, we're going to get a ball game. If LSU doesn't, then I look for Michigan State to win big. But I'm going to tell you something. There's nobody up yonder that's looking at this game thinking this is a pushover. This is a very talented and very good LSU team. And I'm going to say one other thing, because, Ben, I loved your comments. Why I love talking to you. You're so informed. You're right. They have let off the gas. They have. And to me, and I'm just being honest, it's the only way I know how to be, that's on coaching. You know, Tom Izzo, love him or hate him, he's up 20 the other night against Minnesota, and he calls a timeout with, I don't know how much time, 15 seconds left to put a boot in the ass of his team. But think about that. NCAA tournament, up 20, he's calling a timeout to scream at him. And afterwards you say, what was the timeout for? Because we're not going to win in the Sweet 16 with that many turnovers, and I wanted their attention when they're on the court. This is a guy that never quits coaching ever, ever. That's why he would fit in. You'd think he was a Cajun, by the way he is. He's just, you know what, I'm not going to try to impress him. I'll be who I am. And I love that about him. That's what I love about the people at LSU. That's why I love this matchup.
Two teams with a combined 58 wins. Going to square off the nation's capital Friday night. Tremendous preview. Hondo, you know we appreciate your time. If you're traveling out there, my friend, be safe. You know I wish I was, but I got to stay here in Cajun country.
Well, listen, I'm going, and all I'm going to ask you to do me a favor, somewhere out there, one of your listeners, like somebody have a big bowl of etouffee for me, because eat one for the fat guy, because we don't get good Cajun cooking up yonder.
That there is a deal. Hondo, thanks again. Have a great night, my friend.
Thanks, buddy.
That's Hondo Carpenter, SpartanNation.com. South Louisiana. He loves you. We're coming right back in. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Everyone, let's get back.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
Show Louisiana over a radio show in New York City the other week, and I just relate to those good American folks.
That's outstanding. Hondo Carpenter, take a bow. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Curtains up. We're back on 103.7 The Game with you until 7 o'clock, and the phone lines are wide open. This will be a fairly short segment because my guy Hondo was ready to roll. Glad that he was, but we want to hear from you between now and 7 o'clock. LSU versus Michigan State. Earlier today, Clint and I re-ranked the Sweet 16 teams that are left. I had LSU at 11. Clint had the Tigers at 13. You probably disagree. You can call us and tell us why. You can also answer our sink or swim question of the day. Is Gronk the greatest tight end of all time? In the aftermath of 87 for the Pats stepping down, is he the best to ever do it? Any or all, tickle your fancy. Give us a call. Don't wait. 706-0111. While we're waiting on that call, I do want to issue this reminder. You've got about 27, 28 hours, roughly, left. If you'd like to submit a nomination for your favorite young man, young woman at a high school in Acadiana, your favorite student athlete in this area, go to our website, 1037thegame.com. You're going to see the big featured image. It'll be the one that says Artco Equipment on it. And then, you know, the one that says Student Athlete of the Month on it. Click on it and then give us your nomination. You'll fill out the information on the young man, the young woman, and you'll give us a reason why. Tomorrow night is our deadline to accept the nominations for the month of March. On Wednesday of this week, we should be able to announce the young man, the young woman that are going to win in March. We'll do it again in April and May, but we encourage you to get your shots up in March. It's the 103.7 The Game Student Athlete of the Month Award. And it is presented by our friends at Artco Equipment. Clint, a lot of ground covered so far. But there has been one area where we have been relatively naked. A little bare. Don't mind saying it. LSU baseball. Haven't touched a lick on 2 out of 3 going in the wrong direction in Athens, Georgia. I want to preface anything I'm going to say by complimenting the Bulldogs' pitching. Especially the cat on Friday night. I mean, just simply outstanding. Yeah. And that's the game LSU actually won because Hess left them in that type of range. So great to see Zach Hess getting back where he needed to be. But after that, Georgia's pitching looks like that of a top 2 or 3 team in the country, not LSU's. And we know the Tigers are the ones that started with that type of designation.
Exactly. A lot of hype around this team, and it just felt like Zach Hess.
How many cigarettes you eating over there?
None. Go ahead. I might have had one during the break, but I think I'm good now. But anyways, like I said, it's just the biggest thing with me is, like, outside of Zach Hess, the biggest question was who was going to be able to step up. Eric Walker heading into the season, it felt like all the hype was around him. But then again, Eric Walker with his injury was kind of getting on the come up. And it's just a lot like the Cajuns, but more so just solely on the pitching staff. When you look at the Cajuns, it's more of your offensive firepower keeps getting people nicked up. Hunter Castles, Daniel Ayer, to name a few. When you look at the LSU pitching staff and some of the whole thing, bullpen and all, there's a lot of missing pieces. I know we'll probably talk about that a little bit later on in the hour, but there's a lot of missing parts largely due to injury. I think there's a big reason why the pitching hasn't necessarily always been there. That being said, Cole Henry didn't look half bad on Saturday either.
And we will give a little more of an update on LSU's pitching staff in particular as it relates to Jaden Hill, the freshman from Arkansas. That, and as we wind down today's program, a little Astros conversation. I talked a lot of Astros in the weekly reboot podcast, but it's time to bring at least some of that to be too BS. How about a three-year deal announced over the weekend for JV, Justin Verlander? And that was right on time. Jeff Luhnow, keep doing what you do. You're a genius. And that's why people should always pluck off the St. Louis Cardinals tree. That was shameless, but it's still true. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. All we do is truth on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before.
Cork. Now the tape.
Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
We're running down something. All right, I don't know if it's a dream, but we're running it down, baby. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And you, when you're ready, over the next 25 minutes. Just dial us up, 706-0111. Clint and I started a conversation on LSU baseball. Let's open that door up a little bit wider. The Tigers still a very respectable 17-7 overall after going 1-2 in Athens. The SEC slate now at 4-2. But the alarming part for me, it's not just the issues with pitching, in particular arm soreness and a lack of depth due to injury. But yes, that qualifies as pretty darn alarming. The alarming part for me is this. LSU is now 1-6 in true away games this year. 1-6. That includes a sweep at Texas and then dropping 2 out of 3 that we just witnessed on the road in Georgia. It doesn't get any easier this week. Yes, there's a tune-up tomorrow night at the box. McNeese State visits Baton Rouge. But then Thursday through Saturday, so it comes quickly. LSU's taking a trip. They're going to play at the Dude. Yeah, they're going to Duty Noble Field to play number 2 Mississippi State. And this is a very good Bulldogs team. That's not a place, and this isn't the type of team where you try to get right. And with Cenk Mangum out there going stride for stride, battling Antoine Duplantis to set the all-time hits record in the SEC and the NCAA, it's an offense for the Bulldogs that's going to test even a healthy pitching staff. And those are not the words I would use to describe Alan Dunn's group right now. Earlier today, Paul Maneri announced that LSU sent Jaden Hill for an MRI over the weekend. Results were good, but there's still no timetable on his return. Hill, the freshman out of Arkansas, was so good to start the season during the military appreciation weekend. Haven't been able to get him back since. What's more, Maneri added that Landon Marceau and Chase Costello were unavailable this past weekend, something that our good friend James Moran, Tiger Egg Magazine, says is newsworthy. So they didn't know that going into the weekend. It's a baffling, and that is the word that Coach Paul Maneri used, it's a baffling string of arm injuries and a lot of guys out there, CD, with arm soreness. So the only other news I can share with you is that tomorrow night, Mikhail Hilliard will start, and then Maneri says we will, quote-unquote, piece it together from there.
Yeah.
So a brutal weekend in terms of getting guys back from injury. But if you want some silver lining, Zach Kess was ace worthy and Cole Henry solidified a weekend rotation spot.
And that's huge when you think about it, because outside of Zach Kess, it felt like there was nobody really there to take the reins of one of those starting rotation spots. And Cole Henry finally kind of showed out and lived up to the hype a little bit. And I know Paul Maneri is kind of glad now that he doesn't necessarily have to deal with a whole lot of 5-game weeks, especially this week with only 1 up against McNeese, and then you've got that 3-game road trip over the Dude, which I think he'd much rather be inside the box, but, you know, beggars can't be choosers.
So Hess, who has 1 excellent start strung together with a lot of mediocre starts, some that are probably on the good side of middle of the road and slightly on the bad side of middle of the road, that's been Hess so far. That's your Friday night guy. You've been going back and forth due to injury on Saturday night. Looks like you're going to settle in at this point on Cole Henry. And then Sunday, Eric Walker. Eric Walker was always meant to be the Sunday guy. He's the one that's kind of your anti-Friday night. He's not eating up a lot of innings.
Yeah.
But he can be steady Eddie, and he can keep you in it to where you can win it late on a Sunday. LSU not able to do that yesterday. They're going to have to start out slugging people at this rate, CD. If they can't get some of their starters back in good form, if they can't build depth, it is amazing how quickly the narrative of this season changed. Because in the preseason, it was all about, wow, there's five or six guys that could start on this team. Now, all of a sudden, they're just hoping that there are three consistently. I'm not sounding the alarm bells, but this team's got an issue going to play number two Mississippi State on the road this weekend. It's not a win or your season is screwed series. It's not even close to that, right? You're only six games into SEC play. But if they get swept or they drop two and they're having all the arm soreness issues, the narrative this season has changed dramatically, and it's going to go in a really negative direction if that happens.
Exactly. It's such a huge difference to what we thought about heading into the season of being Omaha or bust. I think now we kind of need to at least temper our expectations a little bit based off of what we've seen last weekend and this weekend. I have to agree with you, Ben. If you get swept, I feel like it's going to hurt a lot more down the line with all the arm soreness you have, because you don't know when you're going to get some of these guys back, if at all. I mean, especially with Jaden Hill, Landon Marceau, all these guys, and then you kind of have to make your decision what you're going to wind up doing with some of these midweek games. Are you going to wind up being a Jack / Johnny Holstaff, or are you going to be kind of your hands tied, if you will, with a guy like Mikhail Hilliard having to be your midweek starter for at least one of these games and have to find that quote-unquote fourth starter for the occasional five-game week?
And look, I completely understand what you're talking about. That's almost the backside of this discussion. Can you afford to go Holstaff, because you're going to need some of those big-time arms on the weekend if you get one of those oblique starts from Cole Henry, from Zach Cass, from Eric Walker? If you have to come in the second or third inning, all of a sudden, boy, that's not appetizing when you threw Devin Fontenot, who knows, two innings on a Tuesday start or a Wednesday start. So what you're saying is well-founded at this point. Overall, I know this. We came into the season, and I said UL, for me, had a ceiling of a team that could play in a regional and would probably have to luck its way into a super. With LSU, we said they better be to Omaha or it's a disaster. And I said I think they have the type of talent that they probably should be in that best two out of three final series. I hate to say it, but I think we're doing some recalibrating on both levels. At 11-14 overall, this Cajuns team is many, many, many crow hop, long toss throws away from getting into postseason type of form. But LSU is that far away from CWS Omaha talk as well. I think history shows us not to give up on LSU. I think history shows us that the Cajuns are in a lot more trouble. It's hard to do it without a bona fide ace. Hess, as that ace started to awaken this weekend for LSU. Leger, on the other hand, might be shut down. Is definitely, it seems like, going to be relegated to a bullpen role. So, underachieving baseball right now in South Louisiana. Final thing I'll tell you is this. I will be at the Wally Pontiff Classic again this year on April 16th. So we've got, what, 3 weeks roughly between now and that time? Just about. There better be a different tune that we're singing for both of these programs, or else they're going to fail to live up to some of the expectations. For the Cajuns, with the injury to Leger, with some of the issues at the plate, maybe we should have seen it coming. With LSU, there is no damn reason for this to be happening. I hate to put it that way, but this rash of arm injuries and soreness, it's not good. It seems chronic, and I'm sure there will be investigation going forward. I'm not saying that there's wrongdoing. Don't misunderstand me. But Ronnie Rance has come to this program and said, look, it's not that they throw too much in the offseason. Ronnie says, if anything, they baby him a little bit. And at the first sign, they shut him down. Maybe they're not working through fatigue anymore. Who knows? But it is very baffling and not fun for fans of the purple and gold. All right, we'll take our final break of the program. Little Astros conversation when we bounce back in. Plus, we can get back to the story of the day. LSU, Michigan State playing in the Sweet 16. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be back one final time on 103.7 The Game.
.1037 The Game is all over social media, and we want to interact with you. Tweet us at 1037 The Game.
and vote on our show's Twitter polls. Like 1037 The Game on Facebook. Comment on the biggest topics involving your favorite teams.
Incense.
Check out our video recaps and give us your feedback. Can't get enough live and local sports talk? Keep the conversation going online all the time with Acadiana's number one sports station.
Yes!
1037 The Game. Football season can't come fast enough.
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
You little...
Luckily, you have Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love to help get you by.
Cube, and you're right. It has been a good day. We're not done yet. Bumper to Bumper Sports back in on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. Phone lines open. 706-0111. We'll go Astros for a little bit here. Making their return from West Palm Beach, Florida. A successful, I guess, spring training run that you would classify as highlighted by the deals done off the diamond. 6 years, $100 million given out to Alex Bregman. That we learned just about a week ago, maybe a little less than a week. And some of those numbers are misleading, right? It includes this season. It's really only 2 years extended past when his rookie deal would end. But still, it pacifies the player. And as I said on the Weekly Reboot podcast, let's think in terms of numbers. Nolan Arenado is getting $33 million a year to play third base. You're going to pay literally half that on average, $16 million and some change, to Alex Bregman. And you lock him down, hey, everyone's happy. Over the weekend, we learned 3-year contract for Justin Verlander. And boom. Just like that, the short to medium range future of the franchise and some of the bedrocks have been secured. Jose Altuve has already been broken off. George Springer. Correa was paid after his rookie of the year season, but I think a lot of people suspect that 2 years or so down the line from right now, he might be the one that's hard to fit into the budget. Time will tell, but that's future talk, right? That's 2021, 2022 type of talk. For right now, at least, CD, going into the season, everybody that needs to be taken care of for the most part has, with only one exception, Dallas Keuchel.
Which is weird.
But if the reports are to be believed that his agent said no to a 1- and a 2-year offer from the Astros, then good luck, God bless. There's nothing they can do.
Yeah.
But I think everybody in the family seems happy going into this campaign.
And they should be happy heading into this campaign because you've got a lot of guys around that are able to do a lot of good things, especially with the pitching staff and you locking down Justin Verlander, presumably. I mean, he's 37 years old. You can only imagine how many years he's got left in his career.
I think we probably could make a good comparison that he is Brady or Breeze-like.
Yes, exactly.
There's nothing wrong with him being long in the tooth because of the care he takes of his body and how dominant he is, how focused he still is. Yeah.
And I'd probably pin him more as a Drew Brees-type guy because he came in at the right time, right after a big tragedy that hit the city of Houston and helped rally the city around the Astros.
Never actually thought of that, but that's a good point.
Yeah, I guess that's the biggest thing for me is Justin Verlander, keeping him around, that's huge. But I think getting the core nucleus together with Bregman, Altuve, and I think they're going to have to realize, like, hey, they need Correa, because Correa, I feel like, is another one of those guys, one of your first notable names that you can think of off the top of your head that wound up being one of those guys that was a true in-house product.
Understand what I'm about to say is, like, 2022 and beyond,
yeah,
right?
Of course.
I'm not sure, as compared to the rest of the stars in that galaxy,
yeah,
that you need him the most, the second most, or the third most, and the reason is very simple. Alex Bregman can not only play shortstop, he'd be an all-pro defensively at shortstop.
Yeah.
You've got a guy that can play that position at an incredibly high level. Don't get me wrong. If I could have Bregman and Correa, I want Bregman and Correa. I don't want one or the other. But if I'm having to choose up, I'll take the guy that could be an all-star at third or shortstop. So that's why long-term I'm not quite as concerned there. But I do want you to hear from Jeff Luhnow and the GM of the Houston Astros talk to reporters and gave them some insight on how this deal with Justin Verlander is going to affect the Astros' rotation moving forward. Bueller.
Give me a minute.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Somebody's not on his P's and Q's. Look, you thought you were getting off in the last segment of a 3-hour show. Thought you wouldn't be asked to pull up the Jeff Luhnow sound. I'll let you count me in here, brother, but at some point, we are going to have to let the people know how this affects the Astros' rotation moving forward.
Well, it's big for us, I think, not only for, you know, this year having Justin and Garrett at the top of rotation, but having the rest of the guys that have made the team, I think we're going to be formidable. I think we're going to have – rotation's going to be a strength again. We know we've got a lot of young pitchers that are on their way, and Justin and Garrett have already done a lot of mentorship with them. But if we think about next year with Lance coming back and Justin here and you know, Brad's still here, and it's going to be – we're going to have a good rotation for a long time, and that's where it all starts. You don't win in the postseason without excellent pitching, and for us to know that we have a Cy Young caliber, all-star, MVP, future Hall of Fame guy at the top of our rotation means the next 3 years are going to be a lot of fun in Houston.
Completely agree with them. And if you can go Verlander, Cole, life's going to be pretty good. After that, I have some reservations, and you'll have to mind those, right? I'm just sorry, I do. I don't know that it's going to cost the Astros a potential World Series where otherwise maybe they'd be in the money. But he mentioned Brad there. We'll see how Brad Peacock performs. Excuse me. He didn't mention Colin McHugh, but that's going to be a big deal this year. You're moving him from all-star bridge reliever back into the starting rotation. That's got to work out for you. But the biggest hit that has to occur long-term is the development of Forrest Whitley. And I understand that he mentioned Lance McCullers. Okay, that's 2020 talk. So there are a lot of guys that have a chance to fill the roles of 3, 4, and 5 starters after Verlander, Cole. But at least 50 to 60% of those names that I just mentioned, you throw in like a Framber Valdez, for example, a Joshua James, 50 to 60% of those guys are going to have to work out, or you're going to have some holes. Now, here's the luxury part of everything I'm talking about. Everything that I'm saying would separate the Astros from just about anybody in the game, except for maybe the Cleveland Indians, if you had 4 to 5 legit bona fide starters. If they have only 2 or 3 that they trust, they could still be really, really, really good. But they may not be World Series good, CD. So that's the only thing at this point that I'm doing a little head-scratching about. But the Verlander move, love it.
Oh, it's huge. I mean, it's definitely probably one of the biggest moves the Astros made this offseason. And when you're talking about that, the pitching rotation, it's not going to be what we saw last year with Gerrit Cole, Dallas Keuchel, Justin Verlander. Three guys right out the gate to where whenever you're in one of these best-of-7 series scenarios, you have a really good shot of at least taking 2 out of those 3, and that puts you in good position to wind up taking those other 2 down the line. And you don't have to wind up using quite as many arms as you would if you didn't have, like, let's say, a 3-star kind of system where you had 3 studs and then your other 2 guys can kind of get things done in those kind of middle week games, if you will.
But it's really, it's interesting when you consider all the churning and the turnover and the injuries, the call-ups. If you really consider everything that's happening, just take everything I'm about to say into consideration. Charlie Morton pitches with the Tampa Bay Rays. Dallas Keuchel is currently a free agent. Lance McCullers Jr. is out for the season with an injury.
Yep.
Forrest Whitley really struggled during spring training, and I think it's understood at this point that he's going to start the season at AAA, which he probably should.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Peacock was more of a bullpen guy last year. Colin McHugh was intentionally a nails, lights out bullpen guy last year. Framber Valdez was more of a bullpen guy last year. Joshua James, you see where I'm going with this a little bit? So
I see the pattern.
There's been a lot of change right now after the top 2. It's great to have the top 2. You need it to win at a high level, but that is going to be the most interesting part of the Astros season to me. This time last year, it was probably closer.
Yeah.
If you think about it, we were talking about Ken Giles, eventually became Roberto Asuna. By all accounts, they love Asuna.
Yep.
It's going to be the back end of the rotation. And here's one thing we haven't talked about yet. Knock on all the wood you can find. If Verlander or Cole is forced to miss a significant part of this season, I hate to crush this pun here, but Houston, we've got a problem.
Oh, really? I mean, you do. You do have a problem. And, you know, you're talking about all these guys that have a lot more bullpen experience. It makes you wonder with the way the MLB kind of is starting to turn.
Openers.
Openers, exactly. That was something I talked about with Jordy a couple weeks ago, more about with Zach Hess, but now we can say Zach Hess. Definitely not. He's probably going to be a solid starter the rest of the way based on what we've seen the last couple weeks. But I think having an opener in at least one of those slots as like a number 3 or number 4 starter, I think that might wind up working out quite well for him.
Yeah. Look, it's going to be a great season for the Astros. I think they absolutely have what it takes to get back to the World Series this year. Starting pitching depth after the first two and health at that position is going to be paramount. All right, we got to thank our guest today. The full three-hour tour on a Monday, and people think I don't have that in the bag. Get out of here. Crazy. Only three guests, one an hour, and they were all dynamite. Our thanks to Ricky Blanton, former LSU basketball great. He was with us in the 4 o'clock hour. Ruffin Rodrigue, former LSU football great, and a hell of a restaurateur, or tour, as it were, at Rufino's on the River. He was with us at 5:15. And then Hondo Carpenter, if you missed that, I'll suggest you give it a listen. He does great work for SpartanNation.com, and he loves some spicy Cajuns. You're just going to have to trust me on that. All of those interviews available, 1037thegame.com, and the free mobile app when you click or tap on demand. Clint and I, we got to tap out. Tomorrow, I'm going to be on the road again. Dial in at 4. Oh, you'll hear just where I'm at. It's going to be somewhere very, very new and fun. For the famous Clint D, I'm Ben Love. This has been Bumper to Bumper Sports. Catch you tomorrow at 4 on 103.7 The Game.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is KLWB Karen Crow Lafayette.
1037 The Game, a Delta Media station. Call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663.
6 nights a week.